Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls Media Roundtable. Amazon warehouse workers on Staten Island just voted to unionize. It is the first Amazon warehouse to ever unionize in this country, and we will discuss this in the second half of today's show. We begin by discussing the Russian Asset Tracker, a project from the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, The Guardian, and 25 other media outlets. The project tracks down and catalogs the vast wealth held outside Russia by oligarchs and key figures close to Russian President Vladimir Putin. According to the project, as average Russians have seen their income stagnate in recent years, the country's wealthiest fly around the world in executive jets, lounge in Mediterranean mansions, and cruise the seas in some of the world's biggest yachts. So far, they've uncovered over $17.5 billion in assets and counting. Joining us to discuss the Russian asset tracker is Kevin Hall, North America editor for the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. That's an investigative platform that exposes crime and corruption so the public can hold power to account. Kevin Hall leads investigations in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Kevin Hall is former chief economics correspondent and a senior investigator at McClatchy Newspapers. He shared the 2017 Pulitzer Prize for explanatory reporting on the Panama Papers. Hi, Kevin. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks to be back. Great to be back.
Great to have you back. Matt Smith is an award-winning political and investigative journalist and a former staff journalist at the Center for Investigative Reporting. Matt Smith has a piece in the San Francisco Standard called Search for Russian Oligarch Wealth Hits a Wall in San Francisco, Thanks to City's Disregard for Public Records Laws. And you can find that piece at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Matt. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, and thank you.
Well, great to have both of you. The invasion of Ukraine and the sanctions on Russia have really put a spotlight on how much wealth has been taken out of the country. And this whole system has been enabled by lawyers, lobbyists, and other players in the West. Kevin, you've been working since 2016 on a number of investigations looking at how the wealthy and powerful stash their money in offshore accounts and real estate. And now you're part of this international team of journalists working on the Russian asset tracker. So tell us about this huge undertaking and why you all decided to take this on.
Well, partly because we were really well equipped to do it. We've been, as an organization, focused on Russia and the former Soviet republics and corruption and money laundering and organized criminal activity for the better part of the last 14 years. So a lot of this stuff was kind of low-hanging fruit, if you might say, because we've been looking at this for a while. But then it just seemed like if we were really going to aggressively sanction, let's get a roadmap out there so people around the world can, governments around the world can kind of come in behind us and say, okay, here's this yacht, here's this, you know, these seven apartments in London or these, you know, assets and entities. So that was kind of the thinking behind it. And we will continue to update it. We've got another batch of updates coming real soon. And as expansions grow, it'll grow from there. We chose to work off the 35 people who were named by Navalny, the imprisoned Russian opposition leader. He had identified 35, for lack of a better term, bagmen for the Putin government to the UK Parliament in a letter. And we chose to start, rather than people who've been sanctioned, to go off of those 35 names that he identified as money men for the Putin regime, and we're building out from there.
As you report, this information can be very difficult to find because so many of these people have learned to keep their wealth obscured. They hire an army of lawyers to hide their wealth in secretive bank accounts and corporate structures that reach far offshore. You say this is a tall order for even experienced investigators.
Oh, sure. I mean, we've identified assets that governments like Germany is having trouble seizing a yacht because the ownership structure is so kind of convoluted. There's a yacht out there that's supposedly tied to Putin that nobody can find the ownership structure. So, I mean, they've done this, and this has kind of been what the Pandora Papers, the Panama Papers, our open Lux investigation at OCCRP. All these investigations have all kind of been pulling at this thread of kind of anonymity and trying to pull it out of the darkness. And more recently, our Swiss Secrets stuff on Credit Suisse then actually had the money, because one of the challenges has always been connecting the money and the offshores. So it's kind of like a giant puzzle that kind of continues to be put together piece by piece. And, lawyers work real hard to structure these things in trusts and foundations and nominee directors and all kinds of tricks to kind of have layers and layers between the person who bought the boat and who appears as the owner. So it's a very complex web.
What is with all of these yachts, Kevin? This one super yacht that's worth $500 million is reportedly belongs to Alexei Mordozhov, Russia's third largest person, third richest person. Why do they buy such expensive yachts? What's behind that?
I'm guessing because they can. It's certainly a question I don't think I'm equipped to answer, not owning a $500 million yacht. But I think the ostentatiousness of it all is kind of what is so jarring. And, we've been able to track one of our partners, Roman Anin, had the famous Princess Olga tracking the boat, to Sechin, Igor Sechin. So based on social media postings of the wife and girlfriend, rather. So you have this this need to kind of display this flashy, over-the-top wealth, and that's, as ironic as it sounds, the need to kind of show the whole world how rich you are has made it easier to track these things. So we've been able to, use photographs and Instagram postings and postings in London and postings on beaches around the world that kind of be able to piece together some of these assets. And an interesting case was the sister of Usmanov, who is actually Soviet Uzbeki originally, and the Uzbekistan. And his sister had posted social media postings of herself in Sardinia, and that she was geolocated to a house right next door to a property owned by Usmanov, and his boat was, there was a giant yacht who just happened to be nearby. So that's kind of how you start piecing these things together. The good news is they continue to want to show this stuff off, and that makes it easier to find them and track them.
Wow. And Matt, as I read in the intro, you've got this really amazing piece in the Pacific Standard called Search for Russian Oligarch Wealth Hits a Wall in San Francisco. You write that when researchers looking for hidden wealth venture online in San Francisco, one of the world's top money laundering destinations, they hit a wall. First off, what makes San Francisco one of the world's top money laundering destinations?
Sure. Well, thank you. I don't work for the Pacific Standard. I work for the San Francisco Standard, which...
Oh, I'm sorry. That was our fault. The San Francisco
Standard. No problem. I just wanted to say where people could find it in addition to on KLW. It's ssstandard.com where I'm employed. And after the story that you just described ran, I shouldn't have been, I suppose, surprised to learn that it's not very common knowledge at all that San Francisco is a major money laundering destination. And my sort of answer is, well, why not when you have, $2, $3, $4 million apartments on sale that are very efficient and quick place to put money. And my story was about how people like Kevin, organizations around the world, and there are advocates that are anti-money laundering organizations that do research. There are academics. There's law enforcement that work from Eastern Europe and, in Kevin's case, Washington D.C., trying to track these types of assets. And here in San Francisco, you have. I'll give an example. The alleged henchman of a former prime minister who fled with many, many, many millions of dollars is a landlord around the city, and you can see his properties. You can look up his eviction proceedings because he's just right there. Former Mayor Willie Brown, the building that he's lived in. There's somebody who had bought an apartment Ukrainian who had allegedly been involved in Paul Manafort's dealings, according to Ukrainian press. And so obviously this is a place that people like people working with Kevin would want to look. But if you go online from Washington, D.C. or Hungary or wherever, you'll find that one page of records showing real estate ownership and transactions and such costs $3. Well, a single apartment or a single building, a research project of the type that Kevin is undertaking, that can run hundreds and hundreds of dollars just for a building. Basically, it's almost a lost cause. San Francisco, of the 12 money laundering destinations in the United States that the U.S. Treasury thinks are of most concern, San Francisco's real estate records are the most expensive. And what that does, it's not, I don't imagine that, you know, there's San Francisco politicos in a back room cooking up, let's protect oligarch wealth. I don't think it's intentional, but we are effectively hiding the wealth of oligarchs who have fled countries that have a reputation for corruption.
So to get more specific in your piece, you write that the San Francisco Assessor Recorder Office's idea of complying with California's Public Records Act, which mandates unfettered public access to real estate and other government records, consists of allowing members of the public to physically go to City Hall and view records on terminals in the Assessor Recorder's office. Otherwise, as you say, journalists and citizen investigators are stuck paying $3 a page.
Correct. California and San Francisco separately have very, very good laws guaranteeing the public access to their government's activities and information and the documents that come from that. That should mean that when we asked, which we did, the Assessor Recorder of San Francisco for its database of real estate information, they should give it to us. We have as our attorney one of the top specialists in those public record laws in the state. They have refused, based on the idea, refused to provide them to us in the way that the law describes, by saying that the records are in the possession of an outside vendor, so it's out of their hands. Our attorney said that is not consistent with the state records laws, and it points to another problem of counties around the country. When a vendor for online record services comes in and say, hey, we can help your county budget by setting up a process online where people can pay through the nose for records. It's happening in counties all over the country. There's multiple vendors that are sort of, bit by bit closing off jurisdictions to free information as provided, at least in California, by law. And so, just as you say, as I said in the story, their idea of complying with the public records law is very different from what our specialist attorney says, which is citizens and people outside the country under the law are allowed access to information that shows any government activity that's not, medical information and such. And certainly real estate transactions as recorded by the county in San Francisco are public information.
Kevin, please jump in.
Yeah, if I could jump in, because I think what the problems that Matt is facing there, are just, many times greater as you go across the country, or amplified across the country. There's no real uniformity. So a search like we've been doing right now, I can tell you that my part of this has been looking at you know, oligarchs and connected people in the United States, and the variation between states, you know, because what you'd be doing, you're looking at property registers, you're seeing if there's a name there. Well, some states you can search by a name, some states you have to have just the property address. How about if they have a lien against them? You go to the UCC filings. Some states, that's right there online. Other states, you know, you have to pay for it. The state of Delaware, you actually have to go to an outside party to see if someone has a lien against it, which is absolutely crazy. And these kind of things amplify, you know, each other and go against the spirit of what's called public records, right? I think in Matt's case, if I had to bet, they were probably doing this initially because they figured lawyers have a lot of money. It's a way to make a little money off lawyers. Great. But how about the public and how about the press, you know, and access to information? And this isn't stuff that they have to go do something with. These records are already electronic, at least for the last 10 years. So it stretches the mind a little bit to think that there's a need to charge for this unless you just want free money or just one more way to jack it. Then call it an information tax, a freedom of information tax, you know, because that's what it is. Mm.
Today, we are talking about the Russian Asset Tracker. It's a project from the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. Kevin Hall is North America editor for the project. Matt Smith is an award-winning political journalist. He's got a piece in the San Francisco Standard called Search for Russian Oligarch Wealth Hits a Wall in San Francisco, Thanks to City's Disregard for Public Records Laws. So, Matt, is there any way to know how much money is being laundered through real estate in San Francisco? You've got a quote from Myra Martini, a Transparency International money laundering expert in Berlin, who says, we've seen real estate prices increasing in places that are attractive for people wishing to launder their money. And it just made me think of a new report from San Francisco's budget and legislative analyst estimates that there are more than 40,000 units in San Francisco just sitting vacant. It'd be great to know how many of those are luxury units. But San Francisco Supervisor Dean Preston wants to tax vacant units because there's such a desperate need for housing, not only in San Francisco, obviously, but across the country.
Frank, that report was based on very sort of general census information, and it really wasn't a reflection of any real data showing expensive apartments being empty. I think the debate here, as it kind of always does, is something that'll be thrown against the wall and then used as an excuse to somehow impede the construction of housing. But separate from that, which, like I said, I don't think, having looked at that and looked at the sources, I do not believe that's good information. Hmm. What is interesting is that if you just think about what a money laundering transaction is, I got massive illicit wealth from somewhere. I don't want to wait around in my own country until proceedings take it away from me. So I need to go somewhere quick and buy something really, really expensive, and then it'll be safe. Well, imagine that person going into a high rise, brand new $4 million apartment in downtown San Francisco. That person is not going to be, as they say, price sensitive like, you know, any other person buying real estate. I have a bunch of money that I need to plunk down somewhere where it's in the form of an asset, and I might overpay significantly for that apartment or that house or whatever, or they even, you know, in Silicon Valley, it's an issue of investing in businesses. And so you get inflated values. And I mean, it sounds like it would only be inflated values for that $4 million apartment. But, you know, somebody that's going to pay, that would have paid $3,500,000, then goes down to an apartment that's $3 million, and the person that was going to pay the $3 million goes down to one. And eventually it really can, according to the experts I interviewed, trickle down to basic housing prices to a degree. And so if you're in a city where money laundering is prevalent, then you can have an inflationary effect on prices.
And Rose, if I could chime in, one of the things that's interesting is the FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is the Treasury Department's branch for trying to combat money laundering. They have something called a geographic targeting order that they launched around 2016-ish. And originally it was looking at Miami and New York, and it's expanded to several places, about a dozen or so places around the country, including San Francisco now. And right now, if you purchase, if you're involved in a transaction where a property over $300,000 or more is purchased without a mortgage, that has to be reported to the federal government. They have not released data of any meaningful way to know how many of, you know, in San Francisco, how many that is, or in LA or in Miami, how much that is, or how much, what compliance is. There's not been a lot of transparency on the part of the federal government here. Good that they're collecting this data, bad that they're not sharing it to give us some sense of behavior. But all that to say that, you know, they felt it sufficiently a concern to include San Francisco on that list of places where people may be laundering money through property.
Matt, as you report, San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin says that he's pressed San Francisco assessors on the issues of access to real estate records for 20 years. Were you able to talk to any other officials? Will any of this change in the near future, given the need to expose this kind of information?
Well, we've been in discussions with our lawyer, with the assessor recorder, for weeks and weeks about this. When I asked the spokesperson to speak on the record, he hung up on me. I don't think this is an issue that, for whatever reason, the city in the form of our assessor recorder wants to discuss. Hmm. And I don't suspect corruption in that department. I just don't think it apparently is not a concern that's at the top of the list in that city agency. In the case of Aaron Peskin, that was kind of interesting because he has long been, in addition to being a prominent local politician on the Board of Supervisors, he negotiates land and water rights for Native American tribes. And in Nevada, he says you and it's true. You go online in a county and you get the records, and it's you know, no hassle. And San Francisco has been way, way behind the curve in providing these bylaw public records to the public in a easy, seamless way. And so he, not because of, you know, international money laundering or anything as exotic as that, his position is, you know, I want to know what's going on in the deed of my one unit or house rental property, and I'm down on the peninsula. I have to either pay a lot of money or drive into San Francisco and park and walk into City Hall and look at a screen. That's not exactly free access to the government's business as prescribed by the law.
Mm. Kevin, this just speaks to the importance of projects like this at a time when local reporting, when reporting across the board is really shrinking. To learn more about San Francisco being one of the world's top money laundering destinations, this is something that just doesn't get that much attention. So can you, before we end, Kevin, talk about why these projects are so important, and then just remind people why the United States is such an attractive place for very wealthy people to park their money?
Yeah, taking the back half of that first, it's an attractive place because we have the dollar as the world's basically reserve currency. So it's the most stable place to invest because you're not going to lose, notwithstanding the unusually high inflation today, you're not going to lose it to inflation, to political unrest, to all the other reasons why you might choose to invest in the United States instead of, say, Paraguay or Belize, or pick your place that has some troubles. So there's that. And of course, you know, you've got the real estate is the one thing that seems to have its greatest store of value. So those two things combined, I think, are big factors. And until recently, the absolute ease and no questions asked nature of it. And, you know, a place that I've written an awful lot about, Miami, it's just been, you know, you could throw a stone at any condo there and you're almost guaranteed to find that any new condo being built there is going to have, you know, 10% of it is going to be Russian or Brazilian or Latin American money that has questionable sources. So, you know, it's important, and it's important for us not to be. We spend a lot of money promoting transparency and good governance and all these things around the world to try to create a democratic and a transparent ideal. And it's undermined by our use of LLCs in the United States and the ease with which people can bring that dirty money here in the U.S. That's beginning to change. We have beneficial ownership rules that came in 2020. So that there's going to be some reporting to the federal government about true owners of shell companies. Again, these geographic targeting orders that the Treasury is doing for cash purchases of property. All these things help. But the truth is, we and I think the ICIJ and the Washington Post did a wonderful thing in the Pandora Papers about trusts in South Dakota. Who would have thought South Dakota would be a place that would be helping bad guys around the world hide their money through complex trusts? So I think we need, as a nation, need to take a good look in the mirror as to the ease with which we're allowing bad actors to keep their money and make money here.
Well, huge thanks to both of you for your important work. Kevin Hall is North America editor for the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. This is an investigative platform exposing crime and corruption so the public can hold power to account. Matt Smith is an award-winning political and investigative journalist. His latest piece in the San Francisco Standard is called "Search for Russian Oligarch Wealth Hits a Wall in San Francisco Thanks to City's Disregard for Public Records Laws." Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about the historic Amazon vote to unionize. The first ever warehouse has unionized on Staten Island. And we will also talk about newsrooms unionizing in record numbers. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.